Thursday, April the 15th.
Yes.
Just one correction. I did not report that I thanked for the help for funding the newly created Recreation Center. It was supposed to be Computer Lab, and the reason why you want to make sure it says Computer Lab is because there are other communities out there who would want me to get them a new Recreation Center. And I can only work so many miracles. So it's a new Computer Lab. Thank you.
All right. Any other corrections? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous. Let's see. Commissioner's report?
We have April 22nd.
Yeah, we did that.
I'm sorry. The motion was for both.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, and I have a report, and I know Commissioner, our chairman was at the service, the dedication of the memorial in honor of the people who were lost by the killing, the sniper killings, and that took place on Friday. Mr. Perdue was present also, and Chairman Balazs was the host of it, and he did a very fine job, but it was a most... it's called Preservation Terrace, and it is a...
Reflection Terrace.
Reflection Terrace, I'm sorry. Thank you for the correction. Reflection Terrace, and it is in a truly lovely site at Brookside, and it does inspire contemplation and a sense of peace and a chance to think. And the county executive spoke, and members, family members of the victims spoke, as well as other county officials, Nancy Florine on behalf of the county council. And it was a very special afternoon, so I just wanted to mention that.
The folks at Brookside Garden did just a fabulous job.
They did.
As always, was really, including arranging a beautiful day, that added to it, but the event and the location are just spectacular.
It's true.
Other commissioners' reports? Okay. Director's report?
Just to mention that we did have our biannual report with the council on Tuesday. Thought the discussion was interesting, and certainly have a number of issues that we will be pursuing in response to that discussion.
Well, I made a notation about that, and I wrote down the two words. I said that the tone and temperament were, I thought, a lot different than the last couple of times, and I thought that was positive from that standpoint. Doesn't mean, of course, that there's still some things that they would like to have us do, but in terms of how it was said and how it was essentially communicated was much, much more collegial than in the past.
Thank you.
Were we at the same one?
Yes, I agree with you. That's the way I felt about it, too. Now, I also attended the first... I'm sorry, do you want to comment?
No.
Just the first hour of the Fed session on the MPDU legislation, and our chairman's not here. Do you know what they decided about buyouts, or have you heard from staff?
I haven't had a chance to discuss yet.
Well, when you do, I'd love to know. I know Sharon Suarez was there and Greg Luce was there as to what... Well, they said they were not going to take any votes, but just the tenor of the discussion.
That would be helpful to know, yeah.
Anything else? All right. Then we'll go to item one, mandatory referral, Wheaton High School Stadium light.
Good afternoon. For the record, I am Fred Boyd of the Community-Based Planning Division. Items one and two are mandatory referrals. For telecommunications towers at two of the county's high schools. The first we will do is Wheaton. Tom Carroll is here from T-Mobile. which is proposing to do this. We did ask to see if someone would be here from MCPS, but no one seemed to be available for this. Tom, you can come on up if you want. And I see Tom is armed with a few consultants if you have any technical questions on either of these items. In the Wheaton case, here is Wheaton High School on just off Randolph Road. Here's Connecticut Avenue here. There is the high school with its stadium facing Randolph Road. What MCPS and T-Mobile are proposing to do here is take down one of the existing stadium lights. I believe it is this one right there, and replace it with a taller telecommunications tower that will hold both the stadium lights and a bank of antennas that would be used at the outset for T-Mobile's antennas. I understand that there are opportunities for co-location at these sites, although I am not aware that T-Mobile has begun to entertain any takers at the present time. The existing stadium lights at Wheaton are 80 feet tall, and the one that is going to be taken down and replaced is going to be a 100-foot tall tower. T-Mobile views this tower project as helping it with its cell coverage in this area here, between here on Randolph Road, down to Veers Mill Road, and on down to University Boulevard. They in essence see the tower at Wheaton and the tower at Einstein is complementary, both of which will work to improve cell coverage in this part of the county. We did a mandatory referral on the stadium lights at Wheaton 3 years ago in 2001, and we noted that while we had some concerns about the placement of the stadium lights and the relationship with these neighbors over here, we noted that there's mature trees on both sides of Randolph Road in this area that we are confident will do a good job of helping to mask these stadium lights. And we do acknowledge that that this tower will be a bit taller than one of the existing ones, but we still think that the masking will be satisfactory. In this case, T-Mobile is proposing to lease a little bit of space under the bleachers right in that area, about 500 square feet for associated equipment with the tower, and they intend to fence that whole area off. This project is exempt from the Forest Conservation Law because it is a modification to an existing property, and it does not require any forest clearing. And we are aware from our transportation planning unit that the project will not generate any peak hour traffic and does not require any changes to the existing circulation system at the high school. The towers will be unmanned. There will be very occasional visits by maintenance people, and I am informed that what that generally is going to mean is that a guy with a briefcase full of tools will show up from time to time, park his truck in the visitor's portion of the lot, and walk over to the tower, do whatever it is he needs to do. T-Mobile has met with Wheaton's Parent-Teacher Association. They did that earlier this year, and they got a kind of an unofficial endorsement from them. I'm happy to answer any questions, as is Mr. Carroll, if you have any for him.
Yeah, just a couple. Normally, when essentially it's not a mandatory referral, but for the same kind of thing, we get a report that says, in essence, gives some sort of perspective in terms of what coverage area is being included, et cetera. And I'm assuming that you know that.
We have the report of the Tower Commission.
Yes,
we have the record of their deliberations,
and they
approved this.
Okay.
They have voted to approve this, and they have indicated that they were persuaded by the MCPS and T-Mobile argument that this was essentially the most appropriate place to locate a tower in this area, and they have a a record of other places that were evaluated while the search for an appropriate location was undertaken. And if you want, Tom can probably illuminate a little bit more on where else they look.
No, I don't want to prolong this, but I do want to know, because the way you said it suggested that if it's not in any kind of lease agreement, and that is that this is, in fact, a site where if other other firms wanted to co-locate, your lease does require co-location. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Because I think that I want to make sure that was on the record, that this is not a a monopoly from that standpoint in terms of use. And the last question I had is, the leasing fee goes to whom?
Tom Carroll, representing T-Mobile. The lease arrangement is basically divided up between the school where the facility will be placed, the feeder schools that go into it, and then the school system as a whole. So
okay.
It's divided in thirds.
All right. Thank you.
Are there other questions of staff? Do you have any further any comments?
We're just here available for questions.
Okay. I take it we have no speakers on this item?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Madam Chair, I guess we need to do two separate motions. Although I'm under the impression we can do these together.
There would be about a paragraph's worth of additional information I would need to give you on Einstein.
Yeah, this is Wheaton, and then we'll hear about Einstein.
Well, let me move that we approve the mandatory referral for Wheaton.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
That's 4-0. Okay, Einstein.
Einstein, the forest conservation issues at Einstein and the traffic circulation issues at Einstein are the same as they are at Wheaton. This has an exemption from the forest conservation law, and we have a review from the transportation planning unit that indicates their agreement with the argument that there will be no peak hour trips generated by this facility, and there are no, again, alterations to the existing circulation system. The primary difference here is that because of topographic issues, both the original stadium tower at Einstein is a little taller than the one at Wheaton. It is a 90-foot tower. It is this one right over here. And the resulting telecommunications antenna will be 130 feet tall. In this case, the issue, as you can see, here's the front of Einstein over here on Newport Mill Road. Stadium is in the northeast portion of the property. The affected residents will be here at the end of Midvale Road and Valley View Drive, and as you can see, there is forest here that kind of masks the stadium and all of its activities from those residents. It is going to be more visible from folks who live over on this side, on the west side of Einstein, but here we are hopeful that, confident that that the distance, it's about 450 feet from the nearest house at the end of the cul-de-sac here to the location of this tower. And yes, it will be visible, but frankly, all four stadium lights have been visible since they've been in. And the stadium lights here at Einstein have been in somewhat longer than the ones at Wheaton. I am not aware of when they were put in, but it is certainly not terribly recent. That is one of the distinctions. At Einstein, T-Mobile is leasing a slightly larger area, about 950 square feet for the associated equipment, which again will be fenced.
The critical question, and by implication, I know the answer, but we just need to get it on the record. There will be no discernible difference in terms of light spillage, etc., because the pole is being extended beyond the height of the lights, so therefore there will be no additional incursions into the neighborhood.
But the lights are going down here at the same place where they were. It's a 130-foot pole. The lights will be at 90 feet.
Right.
So the there will be no additional light-related impact from the replacement of this of the original stadium light with this telecommunications tower. The impact will be in the additional 30 feet that you can see along with the bank of antennas. And again, this has co-location possibilities, but again, I am not aware that T-Mobile is actively entertaining any.
And this might seem like a strange question, but what color is the pole?
I believe that it just is going to be a replacement the same as the existing.
Which is what color?
There. I believe they're steel gray.
Steel gray, yeah. Right. And you could probably attest to the fact that at that distance of 400 feet plus that steel gray poles, it's almost indiscernible.
It does blend with the background of the sky.
Right, okay.
Now, at 130 feet, do you need to, you don't need to put the red light on the top.
200 feet.
That's 200 feet.
No, you don't.
Yeah, okay. And what is the grade like there? Is it all about the same, or is
this area is? I don't have an exact number, but it is a little bit higher than this. When I was back at the end of this cul-de-sac, you kind of look down just a little bit over the existing playing fields to the stadium. It's a gentle, and it's probably pretty close to flat because it's all fields, but there is a feeling that there's a little bit of coming down.
So the pole's not on a big hill or something?
No.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Other comments from you?
No comments.
Madam Chair, I move approval of the staff recommendation for this mandatory referral for Einstein High School.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 None opposed. That's 4.
Thank you.
0.
Thank you.
Item number 3 is a mandatory referral on Kensington Parkwood Elementary School.
For the record, I'm Khalid Afzal with the Community-Based Planning Division, and with me is Marion Clark from the Environmental Planning Unit, and also we have Dennis Cross from the Montgomery County Public Schools and their consultants on this Kensington Parkwood Elementary School mandatory referral for addition of a gymnasium and 4 classrooms.
To orient you to the site, this is the map for the area of Kensington Wheaton Master Plan. This is Georgia Avenue, Weirs Mill Road, downtown Wheaton. This is town of Kensington, and this is the location of the Kensington Parkwood Elementary School near the Rock Creek Park.
Kensington Parkwood Elementary School modernization of the entire building, new design and construction, came to the planning board in 2002. You reviewed and approved the main building. This time in front of you is addition of a gymnasium and 4 classrooms, which we are told is initiated by the all-day kindergarten initiative, which requires addition of these classrooms. And the budget allows them to add gymnasium at this point. It does not add any more student population or staff, so there's no additional traffic review at this point. You may remember when the original building came in, it was controversial in that because of the site constraints and topography, the tree removal was a big issue and the community impacts, and the planning board asked the school board staff at that time to go explore a two-story option. And the final design that you approved was partially two stories.
Mm-hmm.
When the school board staff presented this option, we had some concerns about the addition of classroom and gymnasium.
This outline in gray shows the footprint of the building, the main building that was approved. And this square here and this portion, this is the gymnasium, and this is the four classrooms addition. The issues that we discussed with the school board staff, we did not have major concerns, although we did look at the impact of this building and how it expands the footprint of the building at this site. The major issue that we worked with them was that addition of this building portion here causes removal of a grove of four trees right in this location here. And that grove of four trees, along with some smaller underbrush and story, has one specimen trees and three significant trees. We explored different options as to what could be done to save those trees and avoid removal. We looked at the possibility of turning this addition here in somewhat away from these trees, but that would impact the trees on this side. We also looked at some structural options, if we could cantilever portion of the building so that there would be no disturbance to the root zone over here. And also we looked at, as a mitigation measure, some green building or LEED certification issues. The school board told us that in terms of LEED certification, they're already doing a lot of the things
that are part of the LEED certification list, but they did not want to pursue a formal certification for that because it would add time to their budget. One of the constraints is the school opening date is 2005. So what staff is recommending is that, yes, we cannot save those trees, but we have a mitigation measure where we went back and looked at the entire site, look at all the trees, the first project that was approved and removal and additional trees, and we have 1-inch caliper for caliper replanting on site on this property, and that adds to about 573 inches of total additional caliper for planting on this site as mitigation. And we believe that that's an appropriate compromise, and that will address the removal and impact of those trees. With that, this project is exempt from forest conservation, and there's no traffic. As I said, there's no addition, so there's no traffic analysis or impact required. And that concludes our presentation, and staff from the school board is here if you have any questions.
Let me see if there are questions of staff at this point. We'll hear from the school board. Any questions or comments? Anything you want to add? All right.
I'll just add that we just circulated to you. I did not get any letters that we could include in the packet item. I did speak with the local homeowner association president, and the school board staff has worked with the PTA and the civic association, and they're both supporting the proposed addition of core classrooms and gymnasium.
Yes, we have a letter from the PTA in support and the Parkwood Residents Association in support.
Right. Just a question of clarification. In terms of the grove of trees that are being cut down, you said they're going to be replaced at what ratio?
1-inch caliper for 1-inch caliper. If we have...
So you have a 26-inch caliper tree, so you're going to get 26 1-inch trees?
We're going to have either 13 2-inch trees or...
Okay.
12 3-inch trees.
Or on the same site?
On this on-site.
Okay.
All on-site.
Okay.
So you're going to have 31-inch trees to replace the specimen tree? Or I don't understand that.
You'll end up with the same number caliper inches. They could put one 26-inch tree or two 13-inch trees.
We have.
No, I understand that, but you're going to end up with
trees or...
You're going to have four trees, and then you add all the calipers together and divide it up to make four trees, or how many trees is it going to be?
For a 3-inch caliper tree, you could end up with 10 3-inch caliper trees. That would be, and over time they would grow up. But right now, if the maximum caliper they can find, I think your maximum is proposed to be 2.5 to 3 inches?
3.5 inches.
3.5 inches.
And unrelated, but still related question is, where are you purchasing those trees? Are you purchasing them from Pope Farm?
For the record, Madam Chairman,
yes.
Commissioners, I'm Norman Haynes, landscape architect, worked with Marion on the project. Just to review, from the standpoint of the tree replacement, we've used the, I would call it the typical nursery stock sizes, generally ranging from 2.5 to 3.5 inches. Where things are tight, let's say along the property lines, we're trying to do infill. We will use smaller trees to get in the understory. They may be an inch, inch and a half caliper. But primarily out on the grounds themselves, we're using a traditional nursery stock, that 3-inch, 3.5-inch size. So far as the source of the materials,
yes, Norman.
They would be coming from Princeton Nurseries, Angelica Nurseries. They would be...
not Pope?
We cannot specify sole source for the stock itself from the standpoint of the bidding process. But hopefully they'll be getting some.
But you will be including Pope Farm in the bidding process.
It's a contractor's option, really, who he wants to use from a contract standpoint.
Right. Didn't we just not have a discussion about this last week in terms of tree management?
We had a report on that looked at tree management throughout county government.
Right.
I don't recall that the school – I don't recall – there was discussion that some other components of county government may be interested in using Pope Farm because it's cheaper, but if the schools prefer not to, that would be, I mean, that's up to that. It's not a requirement.
It's not a requirement.
And also that Pope Farm has some limitations in
right.
The services it provides.
But staff being very diligent and conscious of the relationship between our policies and the intent, you could, as part of your mandatory referral, suggest that they also consider Pope Farm?
I'm asking. But actually, before they answer, it seems to me that Pope Farm indicated a willingness to pursue it, but also indicated that to do so on a significant scale, they needed more money and more personnel and more equipment, and that had so that's an ongoing discussion.
Okay,
but I don't
gotcha.
Think we're there
All
yet.
Right.
Yeah, they were going to enter into MOUs, I think.
You saved Norman.
They were going to enter into a memorandum of understanding with different government agencies to provide trees, and Pope Farm is interested in doing that.
You saved this time, next time.
Well, that's a substantial size in nursery stock. A lot of those are going to take tree spades to move them, and to make it a requirement on a project specifically, I would have my reservations just due to the nature of when the landscaping may go in.
Right.
I.e., I would only move a tree with a spade probably in the fall or early spring, i.e., when it's not in leaf. Now, if you specify that a project has to use Pope Farm trees and they want to landscape in the summer, we're going to have a terrible plant mortality rate.
Well, I think we're saying we're not going to do that in this project.
And the report was not recommending that it was generated by the DPWT and others saying they would like to do it. They would. Wasn't. I didn't understand that as our Pope Farm saying, please
do it.
Please make other people in government get it from us. It was other people in government saying they're cheaper. We think we'd like to use Pope Farm. School system may have a different view about what's cheaper or whatever. I don't think anything in the report was intended as our mandating that people use our trees.
Okay, well, I guess I better move approval then, Madam Chair, before I go any further.
Can I ask a question before that? Just
certainly.
Because I want to ask the school system. At what point did you all decide you were going to do the addition? Because it seems to me it would have been nice if we'd gone ahead and been able to look at the whole thing together. This is only 2 years later. How soon after we approved?
Dennis Cross, MCPS, project manager. These additions were in the bid as alternates, and depending on what the bids came in at and what the alternate prices were determined whether or not we could take the alternates. So the decision or the ability to know whether these were being done did not occur until bid day, which was basically in June.
Okay, but let me ask staff because I don't remember. Did we discuss these, the two additions? Because it seems to me that a lot of our effort to get a two-story building has ended up not getting the reward that it would have if we'd known this was going to be part of the design, and some of this could possibly have been part of the two-story.
We did not discuss these two additions in when we were discussing the main building. As I mentioned in my report, the drawings at that time showed in dotted line possible future additions, but they were not part of the program, and we did not consider the footprint and impacts because essentially they are removing those trees, and we will tag them as preserved, at least. And there was no time frame or estimate as to when these future additions might come in.
But you ended up doing it at the same time as the bid. It sounds like, I mean, it seems like the next time, that since there were always alternatives, and you were just going to find out if you could afford them, right?
And they were indicated on the document.
Yeah, so next time we should discuss them, because I think it would have been helpful to plan around that and at the time.
Hmm. Now, Madam Chair, move approval of the mandatory referral for the Parkwood Elementary School, Kensington Parkwood.
Second. Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much, Madam Vice Chair. We'll now proceed to item number 4, Zoning Text Amendment 04-19, dealing with large retail stores in the C2 and C6 zones. Mr. Russ.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Greg Russ from Development Review. CTA 04-19 is a text amendment to regulate special exception, by special exception, the development of large retail stores in the C2 and C6 zones, and to define the term large retail store. As background, you heard earlier this year a text amendment 04-04, which related to more commonly as big box retail, and it included a definition of a term called combination retail store, which basically required any retail establishment 120,000 square feet or greater that had at least 10% of the floor area there related to drugstore or pharmaceutical kinds of uses, as well as a grocery store, and I can't remember one other use, but that would be included as part of the definition. What was excluded from the definition were club membership stores, I think home improvement stores, those types of uses. Since that time, the Fed committee heard that case and decided that it would not support the text amendment as written then, and instead provided a substitute ZTA that regulates retail uses over a certain size that directly correspond to two categories in the ITE generation book, and those are freestanding discount superstores or freestanding discount stores. Those are the Walmarts, Targets, kinds of uses, the superstores, as well as just the regular ones. They use the ITE generation numbers to support actually submitting a text amendment based on these two uses. Now, with this new text amendment, they've created another definition, and they call it large retail store. And what that definition includes, and I'll read this for the sake of those in the audience, a single business engaged in retail sales whose total floor area exceeds 120,000 square feet, which is similar to the first text amendment. A large retail store offers a variety of customer services, centralized cashiering, and a wide range of consumer products at discounted prices that may include both food and non-food items. A club or membership store that charges an access fee and sells primarily bulk merchandise. A home improvement store and stores connected by common walls as part of a shopping center with shared parking facilities are not for purposes of this definition large retail stores. So they excluded the club memberships again in this one, and also home improvement stores and also shopping centers with shared parking facilities and also with stores connected by common walls as part of a shopping center. Now, from staff's perspective, we still are taking the position that we took the first time around that, you know, what we're trying to get at with this text amendment, we believe that they really need to establish a working group where we can really narrow down what it is we're trying to get here, because we still have a lot of the same issues in this text amendment as we had in the first one. One being, you know, why come up with 120,000 square foot? Where's the rationale for the threshold in this case? Why exclude club membership stores? The rationale was stated that club membership stores generate less traffic during the weekday, the total week day hours. But when you look at ITE numbers in terms of, I think certain, maybe evening peak and Saturday peak hours, club membership stores are either second, range around the second highest in terms of traffic generated. So we say that to say it's still unclear on whether, you know, using those ITE numbers exclusively to establish this definition is the right way to go. So that's another issue we had in terms of this. Also, in terms of where this use would be as a special exception, they propose a C2 and the C6 zone. C6 zone was established really for large uses like a Walmart or like the Supercenter grocery store on Cherry Hill Road, that shopping center on Cherry Hill Road. I think it's called Orchard. But it was established for that, and as part of the C6 zone, there's a site plan review as part of that. I mean, at a minimum, we thought, you know, why not provide that as a permitted use allow it to deal with the bulk issues of circulation and building location, which are some of the issues related to this kind of use. But that's if they decide to go ahead with this text amendment. And finally, in terms of the special exception standards that were created as part of this, a number of them, in particular traffic impact and parking and lighting, are conditions that would be required whether it go through this special exception, specific special exception or not. The general standards for special exceptions would require these things anyway. So we think, I mean, really nail down what it is you're trying to accomplish here and place those as concrete conditions in the special exception standards and not just have generic standards in here. So with all of those things, we just think this thing is really not ready to go forth. So we recommend it to defer it again and for them to establish a working group to try to figure out what it is we're really trying to accomplish here. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. We have one speaker, Harry Lurch, representing Target Companies.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Harry Lurch with the law firm of Lurch, Early & Brewer in Bethesda, representing Target Corporation. As you might guess, we compliment Mr. Austin, support the staff report on this. We agree that the threshold area provides no accountable or quantifiable rationale.
and several other distinctions that are in the proposed definition, such as clubs, centralized cashiering, customer service. Stores that provide customer service are covered, and how that is defined, I have no idea. Consumer products at discounted prices is a phrase which is going to be incredibly difficult to apply in a land use context. They provide no quantifiable or justifiable rationale, I think. I don't know whether in the future Hex or Bloomingdale's will be prohibited from having centralized cashiering by virtue of this, or prohibited from having sales, which we know we have every day. I don't know quite where we're headed. This doesn't really make very much sense as a land use measure. We agree that the site plan is probably the better way to do it. The review of the target site plan for Montrose Crossing involved addressing many of the issues that are cited here, and we think we came up with a very good solution, which will be opening soon. The special exception standards, we agree, are also, most of them are sort of already required. I'd also point out that the traffic generation numbers cited in the second attachment really do not seem to reflect the generation by traffic of traffic at target stores. We're doing some studies now, and we hope to have those by the time the council has its hearing on the 19th. We agree with the idea of a working group proposal and would cooperate with that. And that's really all I had to say, other than I just take a minute to compliment the planning board again on the wonderful ceremony last Friday. I thought that was one of the finest moments in the history of the park system and of this board. I compliment you very, very sincerely, and thank you very much. Any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you. Well, no, but first of all, the chairman wasn't here when we had comments, so I don't know if you heard Harry's complimenting of the Reflection Terrace dedication that he just mentioned. But thank you for your comments.
Job as
yes,
as MC
thank
there.
You for your comments on behalf of the Parks Foundation. It was.
Thank you.
No questions on the ZTA. Thank you, Mr. Lurch. Now,
well, not
a board discussion.
Your recommendation is deferral denial. I guess I'm a little confused about the posture. This has been referred to us by the county council, and it's been introduced, and they're having a hearing on it.
Yes.
Given that, I'm not sure that. If we recommend deferral, that means we're telling the county council we think they shouldn't hold a hearing on it. What would that mean? What would we be saying to the county council?
We could say it's really not at the point of making a decision on it, and they hold a public hearing, but we give the concerns that we have as the rationale for.
I guess I share the concerns you've articulated. I think. They've asked our opinion, and we ought to tell them our opinion of what they've given us. And my opinion is that this is badly done and doesn't have anything to do with land use, at least as it's drafted. So I tell them that, framed a little more artfully.
I don't that was very clear, though.
That we think they should defer it. That's sort of not our place. They've asked us what we think on the merits. I think we should tell them what we think on the merits. I agree that the a couple of things. I think that the points that Mr. Lurch made are apt, and I agree that some of the criteria that this statute would include are not things we have any history dealing with as land use matters. The prospect of staff trying to decide whether the products were discounted or not seems not a pretty prospect.
Or centralized cashiering.
I have no idea what that
means.
It means you can't find a cashier. That's been my experience. I think a lot of people are going to that.
So I think it's worth making the point that some of the criteria here seem to deal with things that are not matters about which we have that are not customary land use. The other thing I'd observe, it seems to me that the special exception, again, as was indicated, some of the special exception issues are ones that are already covered, but others are ones that then are not actually limited to the category that they've excluded home supply stores, Home Depot type places. But then, if you are included, you have to break up the massive scale. Why do we care about breaking up the massive scale of some stores, but not others? If it's massive scale, it's massive scale. The fact that it has centralized checkout seems to have nothing to do with its massive scale or not. So the criteria that then the special exception imposes don't connect in any way with the category that's been regulated.
Yeah, if I would just piggyback on those comments, I think it's also important to remember that in our response to the first version of this text amendment, we did say that we agree that big box retail is an issue and that there is a need for regulation and that there are many potential negative impacts on the community. And we should repeat that here. The problem is they keep trying to draw it very narrowly in ways that don't make sense to us, and that we believe the problem should be addressed, you know, in a more comprehensive fashion, and we'd be happy to staff a working group, or, as you said.
That's
not that we're saying no. We're saying, you know, if you really want to deal with the problem, deal with the big problem. Don't focus narrowly on
stores,
certain stores that
centralized checkout
that are, you know, it's too narrow, and the way in which they're asking us to narrow it is very difficult to enforce.
Yes, it's not based on land use, really. It's based on what the... I agree with all those comments. I would note that if the category were properly defined in terms of square footage and land use criteria, I could potentially support some of the special exception details in terms of looking to reduce the massive scale, contributed visual interest, work on parking, but not in the context of it's okay for this one thing to be a huge box as long as it's a membership or whatever, but this other big box has to have all these design guidelines.
Right, I took that to be the chairman's point, that
we
agree that there are significant issues that warrant...
Which would possibly be addressed. Okay, it could possibly be addressed by some sort of guidelines, but... Okay.
So it's really a recommendation of deferral, not denial, right?
I think they've asked us what we think about this bill. I think we write back and say, what we think about this bill.
Okay,
yeah, fine.
And then they can...
Make their own decision if they want to defer or deny.
And they will.
Yeah, they will.
All right.
So what are we calling it, though, just for the sake of understanding for the next time?
I don't know whether
we're doing.
Support or non-support. So we don't support the bill as written.
It's all right. They don't really care what we call
right.
it. They care what we have to say.
Move that we communicate to the county council the opinions that we've articulated here.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries unanimously. We will transmit those comments to the county council. We will now proceed to item number 5, which is a proposed zoning text amendment dealing with allowing existing hospitals as a permitted use and making requirement for a site plan process. And I have a couple of announcements here. We normally get a staff report first. A couple of the key staff people are in another meeting. We'll be joining us shortly. But I don't want to keep the public waiting any longer, so we're going to go straight to the testimony, which we don't normally do. But we're going to take the public testimony first and then get the staff report. And although that's unusual, the good news, or bad news, depending on your point of view, is that we're also not going to vote on this today. We're going to hear public testimony. We're going to hear from our staff. We're going to discuss it and raise the issues that the board members wish to raise. But based on the volume of community input and also on some of the questions I know board members have, we're not prepared to vote on the text amendment today. We will probably take it up 2 weeks from today, although that's you should call to confirm that. We will not be there because we're not meeting next week. We may take it up in 2 weeks, or it may take longer than that. So, without further ado, I'm going to call the speakers. And we'll begin by hearing from the City of Central Park, represented by Mayor Kathy Porter and Councilmember Mark Elrich. And I'm also going to have to limit the time a little bit more than we normally do because of the large number of speakers, but I'd be delighted to provide the city with 10 minutes if you can divide it up any way you wish. Is that okay?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Porter, Mayor of the City of Tacoma Park. This past Monday, Park and Planning staff briefed the Tacoma Park City Council on this proposed hospital text amendment. We very much appreciate that briefing and the staff's participation. The council then discussed this proposal. On behalf of the City Council, I am here today to very strongly request that you not send this proposal forward to the County Council. During our discussion, the Council was unanimous in opposing the modified site plan review process for review of hospital expansion requests in single-family residential neighborhoods. Instead, we would like to see a process that involves more community input. We especially would like to have the community involved at an early enough point in the process that they can play a constructive role in shaping the hospital expansion proposal. The community is also interested in knowing about the long-term plans of the hospital. One type of process that would include these characteristics would be an institutionally based master planning process. In addition to our concerns about the modified site plan review process, we are concerned that the timing of this proposal, coming just as Washington and Venice Hospital is preparing to move forward with an expansion plan, could make it appear that this is an attempt to alter the current rules of the game for the benefit of one party. In addition, the following points were made during our City Council discussion. First, the staff report indicates that hospitals have had difficulties in working with the special exception process. There is no indication in the staff report that communities adjacent to the hospitals have been consulted about their experiences in working with the special exception process or their recommendations for changes in the process. The Tacoma Park City Council suggests to the Planning Board that you convene a working group of both hospital and community representatives to talk through the current process and discuss options that may better meet the needs of both hospitals and their surrounding communities. Second, the Tacoma Park Master Plan, adopted less than 4 years ago, assumes a special exception process would be followed for hospital development. If the proposed text amendment had been in place at that time, it is likely that our master plan would have been written somewhat differently for the Washington and Venice Hospital property and the surrounding community. This may also be the case for the master plans covering other Montgomery County hospitals and single-family residential zones. If the proposed text amendment were to be adopted, the Tacoma Park master plan would need to be reopened to work with the community to modify the language and criteria to reflect the new process. Thirdly, both the current special exception process and the proposed site plan review process have a limited role for community participation because neither process starts from a shared vision and understanding of both hospital and surrounding community needs. Public participation could be limited to a single divisive public hearing before the Board of Appeals or the Planning Board. These hearings are not designed to be a forum to identify common goals or possible compromises. Again, a working group comprised of representatives of the hospitals and their surrounding communities could assist in identifying processes that meet the plan, meet the needs of each. Fourth, the modified site plan process described in the proposed text amendment has a number of weak aspects. A long-range development plan is required to be filed by a hospital, but there is little specificity as to what a long-range development plan is and how it is to be developed. There is no requirement that the long-range development plan be consistent with a master plan. There is no requirement that a proposed site plan be consistent with a long-range development plan. And while there is provision that the site plan should be largely consistent with the master plan, the planning board may waive this if it finds that events have occurred to render the relevant master plan no longer appropriate. Since the Tacoma Park master plan was written with the special exception process in mind, the role of the required in the site plan application is very uncertain. The site plan process also does not address the off-site traffic impacts and circulation patterns that are often of most concern to the surrounding community. It is easy to imagine a site plan review process that spends weeks debating the width of planning strips, the color of bricks, the species of trees, while little time is devoted to significant impacts off the outside of the hospital property. The current special exception process is also weak in addressing off-site traffic impacts and circulation patterns. These are aspects that might better be addressed with a different process for hospital expansion applications. In sum, the City of Tacoma Park would like to be part of a discussion that included community representatives before this text amendment was drafted. However, there is time to have that discussion now before a text amendment is transmitted to the County Council for introduction. We believe Montgomery County can have healthy hospitals and healthy neighborhoods. We believe that there are processes that can bring communities and institutions to a shared vision and a shared concern for each other. We encourage the Planning Board to encourage a positive approach to developing this type of process. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
I want to thank you also for having the opportunity to speak. I'm here to convey the serious concerns of many residents of my neighborhood over the consideration being given to the proposed changes and how hospital requests are treated in regards to expansion. You're presenting a cure for which there's no disease. While it's true that expansions have at times been contentious, the outcomes do not indicate the need for revisions to the process, particularly those revisions that give hospitals a virtual carte blanche to expand without regard to the community. The current process is not one where hospitals always lose and neighborhoods always win, and no hospital has been jeopardized by not getting everything they want. To limit the special exception process and not to replace it with a process whereby hospitals need to justify their requests is a disservice to the communities and is based on the presumption that any hospital request is both reasonable and necessary. That is simply and patently untrue. To argue that simply because they haven't won every case before the Board of Appeals and therefore the process is flawed could easily be reversed and viewed from the citizen perspective and the identical argument made that because citizens haven't won every battle, the process must be flawed. If neighborhoods came before you demanding a zoning text rewrite based on that, you'd laugh them out of this room, and that's exactly what you ought to be done with this request from Lenos and Blocker. None of us are arguing that hospitals are unimportant, nor do we argue that their financial health is unimportant, but it doesn't follow that they are economically endangered and that the process that exists is causing harm. While the poster child for uncompensated care was the most profitable county hospital in terms of rate of return and absolute dollars in the last reporting year, moreover, the politically sexy mantra of uncompensated care ignores the state pricing mechanism that adjusts hospital rates to account for uncompensated care. In Rod's case, if they felt the state adjustment was inadequate, they could appeal it, but Rod did not and has not appealed the state decision. They haven't taken the basic steps necessary to address their alleged burden. The problem is deeper. The presumption of economic hardship ignores other causes. I doubt, for example, that you know that WAS rate increase was reduced by 5% because the state considered their costs to be excessive. The presumption that they say they must build it on campus is also equally flawed. In our community, WAS claimed that everything had to be built on campus or within a mile or two, ruling out many viable sites. They claimed that not having all these facilities on site would jeopardize patients. But when we checked out the situation at Shady Grove, we find they're building a medical office building 9 miles away, and we're proposing building another emergency room 9 miles away. We can't be endangering them in Tacoma Park by suggesting they look beyond 2 miles and then protecting their safety in Shady Grove when they want to build an emergency room 9 miles away. There are estimations made at Tacoma Park that emergency and other services should be located elsewhere closer to the patient base. Finally, this proposal confuses core facilities with medical office buildings. Our neighbors have not been arguing with WA over the core facilities, and the vast majority of their expansion proposal we support. And we hope that you realize this is critical. This neighborhood has not been fighting the expansion of the emergency room, the expansion of the ambulatory care facility, the conversion of the beds. None of those things that we fight, nor do we say that there can't be any increase in parking. Our argument is over a for-profit medical office building. This is the issue, a privately owned building, a Folger Pratt project whose prime beneficiary is Folger Pratt. The hospital hasn't even come to us and said, can you help us with bond financing to help bring down the cost of this project and make it more viable for us. We have seen a severely shaded area where office buildings can be built elsewhere. We feel that absolutely under no circumstances should the construction of medical office buildings be granted a by-right status in any text amendment.